We've been hearing a lot lately about cleanliness following the progression of the coronavirus, to use its more common name. We've been hearing that the best thing you can do in prevention is to wash your hands thoroughly. And we've even been taught again how to wash our hands. Backs, fronts, fingers, palms, thumbs, nails, everywhere. And to do it for 20 seconds or the singing of Happy Birthday twice through. Which actually is quite a long time when you're standing there washing your hands. Have you tried it? I was trying to think of something else I could sing because Happy Birthday, I find, gets a bit irritating, a bit jarring. But it's an awful long time to be washing your hands. Now, hopefully, for most of us, this is nothing new. We've been washing our hands for years, I hope. I'm hoping the boys will learn something, though. That'd be good. But it seems the spread of a new virus has put the issue of how to wash our hands into sharp focus. We have become aware again of the importance of cleanliness, to the point that people are becoming obsessed almost with staying clean, wearing face masks, buying antibacterial gel till it goes off the shelves, not touching our faces. It's now very important to be clean as much as we can to try and prevent infection. And if we know of infection, we're told to self-isolate or keep away from the general population. Which, of course, is nothing new. And in many cultures, it's something that is practiced regularly to try and stop the passing of illness. Back in the Bible, cleanliness was especially important. In fact, at the time of Jesus, it was so important for people to be clean that they separated the clean from the unclean in really obvious ways. There was not only advice about cleanliness and what you should do, but there were also rules. There were rules about how to keep clean and what exactly you should do and what rules you should follow. There was laws about who was clean and who was not clean. There were rituals that had to be adhered to so that people could be deemed to be clean. Because for the Jews and other cultures of Jesus' day, cleanliness, both physically and internally, was very important. Much more important than they are for us today. And there was also rules about who or what was unclean. What or who could be touched or handled or approached in any way. And if something or someone was deemed to be unclean in any way, this person or thing had to be isolated, kept away from the rest of the community. And not just for 14 days, but forever. They were pushed to the edge of society. They were left to a solitary life, far from any form of community, and in many ways they were forgotten. And this, in a way, is where we find the man that Jesus encounters in our story today, the man with the evil spirit. We're not really given any background about this man, but we do know that he is isolated. He is on his own. He's outside of his community. He is a man on the edge, if you like, with no way back in, no way of getting back into relationships. And the reason we know this is because of the situation in which Jesus encounters him. First of all, he's living on the eastern side of Lake Galilee in a place called the Decapolis. We've got a picture that will appear on the screen, and on it you will see that the Decapolis is a group of 10 cities, which are just listed on there. Most of them are on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, but there are a couple that are spread further about. And these were 10 cities who were under direct Roman rule. It was an area that was populated mainly by Gentiles, so non-Jewish people. So most of the Jews of Jesus' time wouldn't go into this area. They wouldn't go into any of these cities to live or to communicate with people for any length of time. Because it was Gentile area and Romans ruled it. And therefore, it was deemed to be unclean. We see this highlighted as the area that Jesus goes into, it contains pig herdsmen who were keeping their pigs out in the fields in this area. Pigs, of course, to the Jews were highly unclean animals. They would not have dreamt of going near to pigs, let alone have pig herds anywhere near where they lived. And so we know from these facts that this area that Jesus went into was deemed unclean. And we also know that the man himself was living in the tombs, or if you like, this man on the edge of society outside of his community had set up residence in a graveyard, a place of the dead, possibly in the eyes of the Jewish community, one of the most unclean places you could be. So not only was this man living in a land that was deemed to be unclean, next to animals who were unclean, he was also housed in a place that was unclean. And his life was filled with darkness and distress. We're told that night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones, meaning that this man was not only not to be touched or lived near or resided by, but he was also someone who contained deep darkness within him as well. Or if you like, he was someone that no one else wanted to be near at all. Someone who no one wanted to approach. Someone who was unclean both inside and out. Someone who you had to avoid just in case, by being anywhere near them, you might catch something of what was affecting their life. This was how this man was seen. Totally unclean and dark, and pushed outside of society. I don't know whether you've ever been in a park, either with young children or there's been young children around, and there's been muddy puddles about. The temptation, it seems, is too much, isn't it, when you're little, not to go in the puddle. I don't understand it, because as like adults, we're like, why would you go in a muddy puddle? You avoid them, you walk around them. In fact, when I walk up the little cut through by Lyle's Road, I'm like skirting into the bush to get around those big puddles. I don't want to touch the mud. Well, you know, Joshua and James loved the mud. And when Joshua was little, I took him up to the skate park. And before they put the drainage in on the new skate park, there used to be a massive puddle right at the end. And he was playing on his scooter. I thought, this is fine. I can handle this. And then he started to, you know, go into the edge of the muddy puddle. And I'm like, well, that's okay. He's a boy. You know, he's played in the mud. And then it went right into the middle and it went over his boots. And I'm like, it's all right. Chill out, Kate. It's fine. And then he sat down. And I thought, okay. At that point, I went, it's a bit after the fact, I'm like, Joshua, can you come out? And then he decided to lie down in the puddle. And by the time he came out, he was filthy, covered in dirt, head to toe. And I thought, well, normally I would not want to go near a child like this, but he's my son, so maybe I should show a bit of love. So I went up, and with like fingers, I'm trying to pull trousers off, but everything I touched just got all over me. And by the end of our trip to the park, Joshua was covered in dirt and mud, and I was covered in dirt and mud, and a little bit irritated. And in a way, this was the way of things for the man in the Decapolis, who lived among the tombs. There was really no way of making this man clean that anyone knew of. And so no one in their right mind would want to go near him, for fear that they might get unclean and become people who themselves were pushed out of society. Except that is Jesus and his disciples, who after Jesus had calmed the storm on Lake Galilee, set off deliberately for the eastern shore, or if you like, set off for this unclean land full of unclean people. And as Jesus reached the shore and got out of the boat, this man with an evil spirit immediately approached him. He comes right up to Jesus in all his darkness and his distress, and he cries out to him, "What do you want with me? Jesus, Son of the Most High God." And Jesus, after a short conversation with him, with these demons in his life, asks him his name. To which the answer comes, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Not only an indicator of the number of demons in this man's life, a life totally overcome by darkness, but also an image of the land in which he lived, a land which years before had been taken over by the legions from Rome, the armies of the Roman Empire, a land the Jews believed was possessed by Rome itself, which conjures up for us this overwhelming image not only of a man in darkness, but of a land consumed by darkness itself, trapped and desperate and overwhelmed by pain and sorrow. And so Jesus, faced with almost total depravity in front of him, faced with hopelessness and evil around him, and deep darkness before him, with great authority and overflowing compassion, commands these demons to leave, commands the darkness to go, commands the life of this man that had been ruined by pain to be freed. And interestingly, as the demons obey his command, he allows them not to just be thrown from this land, but to enter a herd of pigs nearby, who immediately rush down the steep bank into the lake and are drowned, freeing the man from that which had trapped him all this time, freeing this man to live and love and laugh again. Do you know, it makes me think of that urban legend which has gone around for years and years about the battleship that was on the seas and had been out doing some manoeuvres. I'm not really, you know, very up on military manoeuvres, but it had been out and about on the seas doing its manoeuvres, and it was heading in the dark on the way home, a dark, misty, foggy night. And as they were heading in, as the captain looked out of the ship, they saw a light in the distance. And he said, "Oh, what's that light out there? We need to contact that light to, you know, get out of our way. Is it on a collision course?" And the second in command, I don't know what they're called, said, "Yes, it's a ship and we need to tell them to move." So the commander said, "This is the commander of a battleship. You need to move and change course." And there was a bit of crackling on the radio, and then came back from the other ship, "No, you need to move." The commander was like, "Well, I'm commander." He goes, I'm a commander in the US Navy. You need to change direction." Crackling, crackling. And then Sam came back, No, I think you need to change course." Well, the commander was horrified. How dare he? I am in charge here. I am in a battleship. Doesn't he know the things that's going to happen if we crash? He said, "No, I am commanding you to move. I am a battleship." Crackling. The answer came back, "Well, I am a lighthouse, so you need to change direction." And you know, here in one of the most obvious times that Jesus is confronted with evil, when he comes face to face with darkness, the darkness that causes pain and destruction to people's lives, he does not back down. In fact, Jesus is immovable, telling the darkness, if you like, to change course and allowing it to go into the pigs instead of destroy a man's life. And in its place, in the place of darkness and destruction, in the place of discrimination and isolation, Jesus brings healing and restoration, leaving a man who was screaming and cutting himself and living in a graveyard sitting, dressed, and in his right mind. Or if you like, leaving a man who was ready to die, restored, and ready to live a new life. And you know, when we look at this story today, it can often be a story that unnerves us. We may not be too sure about demons and all that, and we don't really know how to take this. We don't know what it means, when actually it should be a story that encourages us, because it's one that shows without doubt the power and the authority and the compassion of Jesus working together to bring freedom to people's lives, not only from demons, but from all darkness and all captivity. A story that shows beyond any doubt the commitment of God to reach into the deepest darkness and bring life. And even though this might not resonate with some of us, the truth is that in all of our lives, there are areas that God longs to break into. We may not relate to all the difficulties this man had. We may not understand darkness and demons. But we all have moments in our lives when we feel we're in darkness. We all have moments in our lives when we feel distressed. We all have times in our lives when we feel we're in captivity to something. We can't quite live how we want to live. We feel trapped. We feel overwhelmed by circumstance. There are things we can't quite break out of, things that hold us captive and take over our lives. Now, for some of us, it might be things like worries or anxieties that stop us from living fully. It could be grief or distress or things that we have done wrong that hold us captive. It could be thought patterns that we find ourselves trapped in every single day, or any number of things that cause us to live in a way that is less than what God desires for us. Whereas for other of us, it might be our deepest, darkest secrets that no one knows, that secretly cripple us when actually we look fine. these things that hold us outside of the fullness of society and the freedom of God's kingdom. So just like the man in this story, in many ways we can be captives too. When God longs for us to be free, when God longs for us to come to him and to gain healing and restoration. And so today I have given you hearts. When I give them out, everyone's like, oh, what's she doing now? Something else we have to do. But I've given you hearts because I want to give you the opportunity, and myself the opportunity, to take a moment to think about those things which hold us in darkness, those things which hold us captive, those things which we know are in our lives that overwhelm us, that aren't right. We want them to change. We want them to be different. To identify those areas of darkness and then to offer them to God. The heart is there, so if you wanted, you could write something on it that you want to offer to God. Or you could leave it blank and just think about that thing and use the heart as a way of offering that to God. I've got my little tree here, which has lights. Oh no, it's good. And I would like to invite you and myself, during the next song we're going to sing in a moment, to either write on your heart or just think about something and then come up during the next song and hang your heart on that tree with the lights on. To symbolise that we're bringing our darkness so that God's light can shine in and break through. It's an opportunity to think about the things we often don't like to think about and to offer them again to God so that we can ask him to work in our lives. So we'll just take a couple of moments. You might want to write something down, you might just want to think about something, and then we're going to sing in a moment, and I invite you to bring the hearts up if you'd like to. In a moment we're going to sing our final song, but there's one thing that amazes me about this story. Well, there's quite a few things, but is that after the man has received his healing and his forgiveness from God, he asks if he can follow Jesus. Or if you like, he asks if he can become a disciple. Not many people ask that. And this man comes to him and says, can I follow you? Can I be one of your disciples? And Jesus says, no. He says, no, you can't. And instead, he tells the man to go back to the community. The community that had isolated him and thrown him out and said he couldn't be part of it. To go back to that dark land and to go back with the good news of Jesus. To tell people what had happened and what Jesus had done for him. Because you see, when Jesus frees us and heals us, he also makes us whole. He reconnects us with people and communities. He doesn't just free us so we can go off and live a happy life with Jesus, having nothing to do with anyone else, but he calls us to go back to our communities. To go back to those places, sometimes when it's really painful to go back to, but just to go back into the normal life of community and to live out the good news of God, to live out the freedom that God has given us so that everyone else can see that it's available to them too, so that they can see his light and they can see his life. And that's what we're called to do as well. Not just come and receive from Jesus and then go off and deal with our own little thing, but come and receive from Jesus and then go back to our communities with that good news of what he has done for us. So we're going to sing our final song together. I can't remember what it is. I've lost my sheet, but it would be good. When peace like a river. Oh, let's stand to sing this together. And we're going to take up our offering during our final song.